Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome back. Taxation is Theft, and I have with me Matt Savino. How's it going, Matt?
Pretty good.
Awesome. So, word on the street is you're running for the Texas House.
Yes, I am.
Tell me about that.
Texas House, District 10 is what I'm running for, which encompasses all of Ellis County and a small portion of Henderson County, just southeast of the Dallas area. About 160,000 people is what it represents. I just want to get in there and do something a little different and change things up.
Awesome. Sounds good. That's kind of the libertarian motivation. Is this your first time running?
Yes, it is. I have never ran for office in any aspect before.
Awesome. So what about your involvement with the LP? Are you kind of new to everything here?
To be this involved, yes. I've always associated being a libertarian for probably the last 15 years or so, but never really doing anything, never being involved in any campaigning whatsoever until about a year ago is when I really got involved.
Okay, cool. That's awesome. What was kind of like the thing that got you over the line to actually stand up and do something?
I mean, you can give a whole list of lots of reasons why, but the one that really pushed me at the end was just the way things are done with CPS, to be honest with you. I know it kind of, some people have their approval, disapproval of what CPS does, how it was originated, but each state, it's actually run a little different. And here in Texas, they have more power than they do in any other state. The state Congress has given them everything that they've ever asked for. To the point that now the CPS courts actually supersede state courts.
Wow, what does that mean? So I've heard a lot about CPS over the years, and so you know, so it's not really surprising to me what you're saying. But what exactly does that mean that you're saying the CPS courts supersede the state courts? What does that mean?
So I had my own issue with CPS. My son had gotten injured. He got life flighted to the Dallas Children's Hospital. As soon as he got there, the doctor reported it as a non-accident to CPS. They immediately got involved, and it went from there. I went through CPS court. I went to regular court. The kicker is the CPS court, even though they didn't find me guilty of anything, took my child away, adopted him out to another family. I have no parental rights whatsoever. The only way to get him out of the foster care system was to sign over all parental rights. The state courts found it, dropped all charges. They couldn't find any evidence to prove that I did anything. I ended up taking a polygraph twice and passed both with flying colors, and there was absolutely nothing they could possibly use against me. The part that really upset me was when we were first at the hospital and the caseworker came to us, he said that they're going to press charges on you and you're going to have to prove your innocence. And that kind of defeats the whole concept of innocent until proven guilty. They have no evidence whatsoever. But that's exactly what he said. He says, I've been through this 100 times and you're going to have to prove that you did not do anything on purpose to hurt your son.
Wow. That's pretty fucked up.
Yeah. So CPS clerks consider me guilty, but the state courts said I was innocent.
And so now, you know, there's also the U.S. Constitution that says no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process. And here, your son's not property, but life and liberty, his life and liberty.
Right.
This sounds really a lot like the asset forfeiture cases where, you know, the police, they take everything and they might not charge you with a crime, but you can never get your stuff back.
Right. Very similar.
So have you talked to like any lawyers? Are you working on getting him back or what's going on with that?
There's not much I can really do. I mean, they initially took my son and my daughter at the time she was 15, even though there's never been any issue with CPS in the past. They took her as well, even without a court order. We later found out, looking through all the paperwork, that they need a judge's signature court order to take each child, and they never got that for my daughter. And I approached that to my attorney, and he even told me that there's nothing you're going to do about it because the state can't do anything to CPS. All they'll do is go and fix the paperwork. There's no consequences for CPS. They're not responsible for their actions. Even the laws that they created or rules and everything, they don't have to follow.
Yeah, that sounds kind of like how the IRS operates.
Right. But there's no way of getting my son back because I signed over all parental rights, but that was the only way to get him out of the foster care system. He was staying with the family in Tyler for an entire year, and he was just, in my opinion, being neglected, even though that they are trying to charge me with that as well, neglect. But
right,
he literally sat in a crib or in a bouncy chair for almost an entire year. The only time he got out was to change his clothes, his diaper, or to take a bath.
Man, how old was he?
He was 6 months at the time.
Holy shit. And your daughter was?
She was 15 years old. 15.
Yep. Man, how long ago was this?
This was going on 2 years now when it actually happened.
So, I mean, there's all kinds of thoughts going through my head right now, but like, you know, for one thing, I'm thinking any contract you signed with the state, a lot of times you can nullify that just by saying you signed it under duress, but right. It comes down to, you know, if like, do you know where your daughter is?
Well, my daughter's out of the system. She's actually back with her mother. They dropped anything associated okay. with her, so there's no issues. She actually came and visited me over the summer before she went back to school. So everything's fine with my daughter. It's just my son. He's been adopted out. I do know approximately where he's at. I know what state he's in, but I'm not sure exactly the city or anything, and I have no way to contact him.
Man, wow. I mean, have you talked to more than one lawyer, or are you just kind
yes,
of
I mean, there, in a sense, there is a way I could adopt him back if the foster parents are willing to release him. So it's a complicated mess, especially going over state lines. It makes it even more complicated.
Yeah, man, that's I'm sorry, man. That really sucks. So, I mean, so you're going to run for the Texas House now, and it sounds like that's your main target. Your objective is to get in there and change the system so that this doesn't keep happening. Do you have any?
Right. It's become legalized kidnapping in a sense. During the mm-hmm. Clinton administration timeframe is when they passed a lot of legislation so that the CPS can actually get up to $8,000 per child that they take out of a family and adopt into someone else's family. It comes in different stages, but it can account to up to $8,000 per child, and it has become a monetary incentive now for caseworkers to immediately try to take children out of people's families, because if they return the child to the biological family, then they have to release all that money that they receive.
Right. It's like, you know, a car salesman trying to tell you not to buy a car, right?
Right. What I want to try to do is try to change some of that legislation, you know, bring them back under state ruling and state law so that our actual state courts are essentially the top courts in the state. CPS should not be above them by any means. Try to eliminate all this monetary incentives to essentially kidnap children legally. There's just a lot of things that are wrong. It's a very complicated system because it's half run at the federal level and half at the state level. And like I said, each state's different on their end of it, and trying to separate the two has been very difficult. But I've actually talked to current representatives in Congress, and some of them are actually on board and would love to work with me if I'm elected to try to reduce the scope of CPS in the state of Texas.
Yeah, wow. And this is why, I mean, you know, like I've said things in the past about, you know, I've told people don't register for birth certificates or social security numbers for your kids. And, you know, knowing that people aren't going to listen to me, they're going to go ahead and do it anyway. But, you know, they think I'm crazy, but this is kind of the stuff that happens. And I know this, you know, this probably wasn't, you know, even if you hadn't done that, this sounds like it might've gone down about the same way, but, or they could have used that as, you know, more ammo against you. But this is like, we're giving all this power to the state, and with the presumption that they're not going to misuse it, they're not going to abuse our trust, and they're not going to do all these evil things that they do. But at the same time, we see them happening all the time. And this is why I tell people, like, you know, don't as many times as they tell us, oh, it just takes one person to ruin it for everybody. You know, like one idiot goes speeding and now all of a sudden, like, oh, no, we need to give out traffic tickets to everybody. Right. But then when you have, you know, one government agency or one government agent who does something, it's never, oh, well, one bad apple ruined it for everybody else. Now we're going to start taking your power away. And, you know, we really have to start looking at it like that, where, you know, these people have all this power. And man, this is like literally power to, like you said, it's legalized kidnapping, but they have the power to destroy people's lives without consequence. And we have the thing that really pisses me off the most is that you have all these people that are kind of like indirectly supporting this just because it's the law, right? Like,
right.
Like, right. Oh, all well,
laws, rules.
Yeah. he must have done something wrong. Oh, if you don't like it, you can just, you know, vote for someone else and change the rules. It's not that easy. We need to, like, collectively say this isn't going to stand anymore. Like, government abuses every power it gets, and we have to stop allowing it to do that. Man, that's fucking crazy, man. But I mean, so, and as much as I hate to say, you know, to take advantage of this, because I know, you know, it's got to be like killing you on the inside. You know, just like government says, don't let a good tragedy go to waste. I mean, use this to, like, tell this story to everybody and use this to get yourself elected and actually make some change, because, you know, the reality is people will, they'll hear that, they'll listen to that, and will, you know, you'll start to, there's so many people that have these stories, and they're kind of almost not embarrassed, but they're maybe ashamed to tell the story. But all that does is it gives the government more power and lets them continue to do what they're doing, because, you know, right, people don't know about it. You know, it's like when we say, you know, oh, if the government was doing something bad, we'd know about it. We'd hear about it in the news. But a lot of the people that it does bad things to are afraid to speak up. So one, congratulations for running. That's already like a huge step. But you definitely got to take this story and take it everywhere, man. Just really, like, I know that, like, a lot of people are going to ask you to take your campaign in a lot of different directions, but really just, right. I mean, I'm sure that's your plan. I'm probably not telling you anything you don't know. Right.
Right. I mean, it is one of the big things, you know. Like you said, I was very, you know, embarrassed to tell people what happened, because I assumed that they would judge me right off the bat. But it's surprising how many other people have dealt with similar situations. You know, every situation's a little different, but the fact that even though you're proved innocent and you follow all the rules and go through all the parental counseling that they put you through, the mental health evaluations, all the parenting classes, there's so many things that they have you do. And God forbid you miss one date or come short on one of your appointments, you know, they're going to throw you in jail for that kind of stuff, for violating their rules, because it's kind of like a probation is what it is.
Right.
And in the end, it's not going to affect whether you get your child back or not. I mean, you can pass with flying colors, like my wife at the time and I did. We did all the classes. We took all the evaluations and tests and had no issues. But even in the end, they said that it doesn't matter. All the attorneys that have ever dealt with CPS say the same thing, that it doesn't matter if you going just keeps you out of jail now, is all it does.
Yeah. Well, what I'm interested about this system, because I mean, it, you know, it sounds like so many parts of government are the same, right? You get a traffic ticket and it really doesn't matter how hard you fight it or how innocent you were, you're guilty. You know, the same thing with the IRS. It doesn't matter. it doesn't matter anything, you're guilty. But if you take the approach that they don't, so like with traffic tickets, once you set foot in the court, you're kind of giving them permission. And I'm wondering how much of this system is, you know, because like you said, they got you to sign a contract early on. And of course, they, you know, they coerced you into signing that. The same as a traffic ticket. They're going to say, if you don't sign it, we're going to arrest you. But of course, the signature on a traffic ticket, you can say that never happened or that was signed under duress. So I'm wondering, like, how much of this program is actually just through coercion? And this is actually why, like, you know, you talked about the state courts not having any impact over reversing that. That's why, you know, when it comes to, you know, license suspensions and all this other stuff, it really doesn't matter if the DMV violates the law and suspends when they shouldn't, because that all has to do with contract law. And it's got nothing to do with, you know, they have the right to refuse service, so they can cancel that contract whenever they want. So I'm wondering, like, how much of this, and I don't know, because I've never dealt with, you know, with CPS or family court or any of that, but that would be really interesting to find out, because it sounds like they're doing something completely illegal. And when I've seen that in the past, that's kind of, you know, it operates outside of the law. And they get it to work outside of the law by making you sign something or agree to something that's basically waiving all your rights. Right. And once you waive all your rights, then you have, like, you could take it to a real court, and the real court's just going to say, oh, but you waived all your rights, so what are you doing here?
Exactly. There's no going back, usually. So.
Yeah, it's...
That's it.
Man, and
sign over everything, and most people don't know what exactly they're signing, because they'll have clauses and everything else that's hidden and you don't know about it.
Right. And I'm sure the lawyers don't, you know, they don't try to explain it to you either. Like the lawyers that I know, that I've dealt with in traffic courts, like, their whole thing is, oh no, you go into court and, you know, you play it in court. Like, that's their whole thing. And not to say that they're intentionally pushing you into the system, but that's all they know, because that's what they were taught in law school, is no, you just go, you walk into court and you try it, and this is how you try it. But they don't really teach you how, you know, how this law or this court is structured on top of a system, that there is a way to void that system completely, or that relationship.
The best they'll do is get you to take a plea bargain, typically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, which, there's,
for them, it's quick and simple, and it still gets money into the system. They get their pay, and they're good to go. They don't care.
Yeah, and they get you, like, I mean, yeah, they get you to sign a contract that way, and they basically own you. I mean, probation, even for, man, probation is so great for them, because it's like, let's say you commit a small crime, like a traffic, you know, misdemeanor traffic violation, and they get you on probation. Now, it's like, man, if you sneeze without covering your nose, it's a felony, because you signed a contract. And like, you're guilty until proven innocent. They can immediately take stuff away from you without due process, and you signed for it. And it's like, man, and like, for most people, when you sign for it, it's like, okay, you know, I think I can manage with this. But they don't realize that, like, I mean, it's not a fair system. They're setting you up, and then they're gonna be watching you and just fucking with you. You know, from the time you sign it, man, that's, have you tried reaching out to, like, news media or anything with the story?
No, I haven't gone that route at all.
You should definitely do that. I mean, it's, you know, it's a stretch. It's, you know, because I know these cases are, there's a lot of them. There's gotta be at least a few hundred cases every year. If not thousands. But and we don't really see that much news coverage from this, but I would definitely try to do that as much as you can, because, you know, that's, if you can get, you know, if you can find the right news station that's willing to pick up on it and tell that story, you're gonna get a lot of people to hear it, and that's really gonna be important, one, for getting you elected, two, for getting people to recognize the problem about CPS, in general, just because I mean, the more people know about it, because here's the thing, even if you get elected, you're just one vote in a Congress of
exactly
what, like 150
people.
Yeah. So it's still difficult, but if you can get, you know, statewide news to cover this, like, you know, newspapers, or even a couple news stations, you know, start local and whatever, or even, you know, even if it is local, and then you can get some clips to put on social media that can go viral, and, you know, the more people see it, the more people are going to put pressure on their own representatives. Right. So, you know, once you do get elected, you know, you can create a bill and you can basically start pushing this bill, you know, getting signatures from people all over Texas and having, you know, telling them who to call, tell them who their representative, because most people don't even know that, you know, tell them to call that number and push for it. Cause that's really, and it should be a no brainer, but it's kind of scary how those people in Austin think, about our rights. We don't exist.
No,
we're cattle.
We're a vote once every 2 to 4 years, and that's it.
Yep. And then they're done with us. Then we're cash cows for oil companies and everyone else.
Right.
Man. So are you committed to like, you know, what's going to happen if you win or if you don't win? Are you going to continue this, or like, are you planning on making like a, like, is this going to be your, you know, next 10 years, 20 years fight, or until it happens? Like,
oh yeah, I'm definitely not going to stop fighting for it. Being elected into Congress would definitely give me a big push. I can talk to the representatives more on a level playing field. A lot of your representatives think of themselves as much higher than the average person, unfortunately, because they don't want to listen to you as just a voter. But
right,
being, you know, quote, one of them, I can get in there and actually talk to them, and we can discuss some bills about at least trying to reduce the scope of what CPS is currently.
Definitely.
I mean, there are legit cases where, you know, a child is being physically abused or something, and
right,
somebody needs to step in and do something, but they've just gone above and beyond so much that, you know, the spanking of a child now will get you in trouble type thing. So
yeah, and also what I've read is that, you know, because they do take kids from homes that really they don't need to be taken from, and a lot of the people who are adopting are just fucking sickos. Like,
right,
what I've seen is that the, you know, the out of the kids that they take from one home and put into a foster home or an adopted home, the rate of abuse is much higher afterwards,
right,
like in the new homes than they were with the original parents. And yeah, it's like I
pulled up some of those statistics, and it's scary when you look at some of that stuff of how much more in danger they are for sexual abuse, physical abuse, neglect, everything else. And in every category, it's a much higher rate once they're into the new foster care than they were with the biological parents.
And I'm thinking about this too, because, you know, there's a lot going on right now with like the child trafficking and, you know, all this other, like, basically what it is like, if you look at it from a very, simple, you know, what it is, it's people who want children to abuse or do whatever with, and they're willing to pay for them. And if you look at the adoption process, it's really the same thing. It's legitimized because it's by the state and there's background checks and everything, which clearly aren't working.
Right.
But then you're incentivizing the kidnappers now by, you know, hey, let's stock up the inventory, go find some kids to take away. And I'm sorry to like to put it like this, because, you know, I can't imagine what's going through your head like through this whole process, but it's, yeah, it's like, it's really like the government has created a legal market for buying and selling kids,
right? And that's who the victims are, is the kids. They're the ones that have to suffer through everything, you know, between the immigration issues that we're currently dealing with, you know, with parents and children being separated to the point that, you know, just recently heard that one of the children died and everything in the custody, and they're supposedly trying to reunite the children with the parents, but the parents have to pay for the reunion. So if they had already been, you know, sent back to their own country, let's say El Salvador or something, they have to pay for the child to be flown back to El Salvador. It's things like this, you know, they might have used their entire life savings to come here in the first place.
Right.
And whether or not, you know, you agree with their way of coming or anything else, it's the fact that we're tearing families apart. That's the thing that I have an issue with, and that's what needs to be situated. At least keep the families together, you know.
Right.
If they get deported, then send the entire family back, not just part of them.
Yeah, and that was, there was, I guess the ACLU sued Trump over this because Trump was trying to say it's the ACLU's responsibility to have to reunite the kids. Like, how did they come into it? But then I guess so the ACLU won, but I'm not sure exactly what that means. Like the court said, no, it's Trump's obligation to reunite the kids, which, you know, but what's, I don't see him realistically doing that. So I don't know exactly what that means. But yeah, that's just another, it's another issue of, and this is like, this pisses me off so much that, like, you know, like all these cops, ICE agents, whoever you are, you're just following orders. You're just doing your job. It doesn't fucking matter. You're not using any fucking common sense.
Right.
Like,
right. It's like the meme I just recently saw, you know, they use Hitler as an example. Hitler only killed one person, but it was the Nazis that killed the millions of people.
The order followers.
That are just following orders. And that's essentially what it is now. You've got people that are in the federal government, the state government, they're just passing laws, but it's the law enforcement are the ones that are actually following through with that. Even though they took an oath to uphold the Constitution, they're violating it every single day.
Right, and these laws aren't, I mean,
being held accountable.
People are trying to challenge some of these laws, but by the time, like, by the time these laws get to be challenged, like, because a lot of people will, they'll stand behind the Supreme Court. Well, the Supreme Court hasn't ruled it unconstitutional, so it must be constitutional. That whole process can take years. So, right. Like, in years of this process, like, you can have a lot of damage done, and then, oh, we just found out this is unconstitutional.
Right.
There was this thing with the IRS. So the deal with the IRS is if you don't pay, what they do is they file a substitute return. They basically file a return for you. And that return is like, you know, they calculate how much you owe and then they backdate interest and fines and everything, of course. But what's interesting about this is just a couple years ago, a federal court ruled that it was illegal for them to file those returns in the way that they were doing it. I don't know if that's going to stop them from doing it completely, but what that means is that for the last 100 years that they've been doing that, they've been getting away with doing something that's illegal, and it took 100 years because, you know, they've been like hiding their practices. They don't like, they're not very transparent at all, even though they want to see every single copy of every single bank statement you have.
Exactly.
They're not transparent at all. So it took 100 years for people to be able to figure out that they were even doing this and breaking the law. And now like people are dead that the IRS has been stealing from. What are you going to do? I mean, it's,
yeah, there's no compensation to them.
None. Yeah, and it's fucked. And like all these people who just have this mentality of, oh, but it's the law, or they're just following orders and all this other stuff, like you are allowing this shit to just go on and on. It's got to stop somewhere.
Yeah, it's a corrupt system. I mean, the IRS even admitted years ago that they randomly audit people just because they know that people would rather pay the money than fight through court. It's just a revenue gathering. That's all it is. You may not owe that money, but because they told you you did, you paid it.
Absolutely. Man, I...
And again, it's legalized theft.
Yeah. There was... and of course, some people, even some libertarians, they argue now, oh, but if they just sent you a letter and you didn't have to send money and you sent it voluntarily, well, then that's your problem because it's not theft. Because
that's right.
But it's like, no, like you're being intimidated into doing
it's coercion. Yeah, exactly. They're making you believe something that's false. And then
right.
If you don't do it, you're going to go to jail. That's what they have you believe.
Exactly. there's, you know, it's like a guy robbing a bank with a, with a, with an empty gun. Like, I wasn't going to shoot anybody. Like, they right, just exactly. gave me the money voluntarily. I never could have shot them.
Great analogy.
Yeah. It's like, no, they thought you were going to shoot them. Maybe you wouldn't have shot them, but that's what they thought. Man, I was going to say something else related to that, but yeah, they use that, like the jury duty notices, like everyone, man, I remember the first time I got served a jury duty notice, I was probably like 20 and my dad was like, yeah, you have to go or else they're going to fine you $10,000. And, and so, and I looked on the back and it said something about a $10,000 fine. So I was like, well, okay, I guess I got to go. And this is, you know, now I'm like, okay, I'd love to go anyway because I'm going to get some poor innocent bastard off the hook for exactly. some marijuana charge or something. But back then I was like, okay, that seems kind of weird and unconstitutional that they could just like charge me $10,000. So the next time I got one, I read the fine print and it's more ambiguous than that. It says if you fail to respond to this notice, you can be summoned by the court, and if you refuse to respond to the summons, which first of all, a summons has to be served in person, like right. they need to find you, they need to knock on your door, you need to open the door and accept it, right? So first yeah. you got to find me, which they're not going to like go through all this work over jury duty.
Exactly.
And then once they do that, if you refuse to appear, they can basically, it's basically, you know, you're under arrest at that point and you have to appear to the court under an order of a bond. And if you don't, you have to pay $10,000 for your crime of failing to appear to a court summons. It's not even for not going to jury duty at that point. Even if you get that summons and then you go to court and say, oh, I just didn't get the letter until it was too late, so I figured it wasn't worth responding. If that's all you said, right. then they would say, okay, well, we don't have any way to prove that you actually had the letter before that. So nothing we can do. We have your excuse now. We can't fine you because it's
right.
And but of course, that's not how people read the letter. They just see, oh, man, I saw a meme today that was like, it had a picture of a pretty attractive woman, let's say, in front of a chalkboard. And it just said some nonsense. If teacher would this $10,000, blah, 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 would you? And it like this sentence made completely no sense. And then like the part of the meme was someone else posting a response underneath that said, well, it says $10,000 and I'm broke. So whatever it is. Yes. Like, so but it's really like it's funny that. That's really the same kind of response. Like when they put $10,000 in between a bunch of like legalese, like words that are intentionally difficult for most people to read that didn't go to law school.
Right.
People like they don't know what all those words mean. So they have to make it up in their head and say, well, I think this means I'm going to be fined $10,000 if I don't go.
Right.
And that's
but even then, they're using legal terms out of like Black's Law Dictionary, which is not the same as a dictionary that the average person uses. So a lot of terms get twisted around and they don't mean what you think they mean.
And then they have the statutory definitions, which are even different on top of that.
Right. Because a state can define certain words that might not be in any dictionary as that definition.
Yeah. That's which actually, incidentally, there's in the tax code. There's a word called payor, P-A-Y-O-R, which is like, if you were to spell like somebody who pays something, that's a payer, P-A-Y-E-R, right? But they spell it with an O. And there's a guy who did like a lot of really like in detailed analysis of, is that just a misspelling? And it was a clear no, because had it just been a misspelling and it was supposed to be assumed as the same word as payer with an ER, that it would have had a completely different meaning. And all the court rulings that they had on, you know, on the usage of the sentences, including that word, would never have made any sense if it was the word payer, which is like, it's totally weird. They just created like a totally new class of people called a payor. And this person is presumed to be a tax cow, basically. It's fucking insane. But they do this shit, like, they do this intentionally so that when we read the laws, we think we know what they mean, but we don't know what they mean. Because of that, we're more intimidated by it, and they can just bend us over and screw us.
They do it on purpose because they know that the average person can't comprehend it.
Absolutely. It's so fucked up. And it, like, I mean, like, and I've been trying to study some of this stuff, and like, even when you're like, even when you know all this and you try to study it, it's difficult to decipher.
Yeah, you end up reading it 20 times and trying to figure out exactly what they're saying.
Right. And the words, like, the definitions can come from so many places that, like, you don't even know where to start looking. Right. There's one really good source that I think it's Cornell University. And they have, like, all, at least the federal laws on their website. And they actually have that where, like, a lot of words, you can click on them if they're defined somewhere. And you can see what the definitions, like, the legal definitions are. But even then, not every word is highlighted. And you shouldn't assume that an unhighlighted word means what you think it means.
But by the time you get done reading the definition of 10 words in that one sentence, you have to go back and reread the entire thing to figure out what it's saying.
Right. Right.
You feel like you just read an entire book and you got through the first paragraph.
Yeah, it's so screwed up, man. This is why nobody should trust government. It's everything they do. It's like the, what's that little card game with the three cards? Like, which one's the ace? And then...
Right.
Like, man, every single thing they do.
Yep. And it's all rigged. It's all rigged against us.
Yeah. It's, what was that? There was this, that movie Big Daddy, where the kid's playing poker with Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
And the kid keeps winning. He's like, I win. He's like, wait a minute. I had that hand and I didn't win. What's this game called anyway? And the kid's like, I win. Yeah, that's basically how the government works, man. It's something else.
Bad.
Shit. So what else do you have, man? Like, on your platform, are there any areas?
Obviously taxes. I mean, taxes is a big thing, especially in the Libertarian Party, of where we've been screwed over. I mean, we're spending so much of our hard-earned money in taxes, and people don't even realize how things are paid for, where that money actually goes. One of the things that I only recently discovered, I say recently only since I started running for office, is how school bonds work, for example. School bonds are based on property taxes and everything else, but that money's not actually used in the classroom, which is what I always interpreted as. It can only be used for, like, buildings, and most likely it's going to a new stadium or something like this. Like, that's what they're spending this money on, and putting people, the counties and cities, in debt.
Interesting. You
know, it's just, and it's millions of dollars, and people don't understand that. They think that it's going towards salaries or books or whatever in the classroom, and it has nothing to do with that. It's strictly physical structures is all the money can be used for.
So this is an interesting subject, because I was reading through some of the Texas Constitution and the Texas laws on taxes, and specifically property taxes and business taxes. Okay. And all I could find anything that had to do with property tax was the state does not charge a property tax, the county does not charge a property tax, but the state gives permission to municipalities, which is a city or town or whatever, the authority to charge a 0.25% tax, which is 25 cents on every $100. And I look back to when I owned property, and it was so that would come out, if you owned a $100,000 house in Texas, that would mean you're not paying any more than $25 a year. Compared to the bill that we actually do get, is that right? No. Sorry, not twenty five dollars. It would be $250, I think. Compared to the actual bill that we do get, which is like
at least 10 times that.
Yeah, it would be. I think on 100,000, it would be like 4,000 per year or 6,000 per year, something like that.
And it depends on where you live. That's the thing. It fluctuates because here in Texas, some states, because I've lived in actually 12 different states now, in some states, it's done at the state level, but here it's done at the county and municipal levels. So every county is different. You know, you go from one county to the next, you can have a house that's worth the same, but it's taxed at a different rate because they establish it differently. And that's one of the things I want to approach is the property tax and try to make it much more simplified. Because right now, for example, one of the bonds they're trying to pass in Waxahachie for the schools, they're trying to say that, you know, they're not increasing the tax rate. Well, what they're doing is increasing the value of your home, which creates more money. Right. So they didn't have to change the percentage. So your percentage that you're paying stays the same. But right. It's because your value of your house has increased, which is done by somebody that the city or county has hired. And of course, is going to elevate the value of it.
And it has no relation to what, like, you can't just go sell your house and say, oh, the county says it's worth this much. That's how much you have to pay me. That's not how it works. So they can just make up any number they want to tax you on, and you're kind of stuck with it.
Yeah, that $100,000 home, they might say is worth $200,000.
Right.
And that's what they're going to tax you at, which is BS. So that's one of the things I want to try to change in the tax laws is, one, get it out of being so different from one county to the next. Make a standard statewide and then put it based off of, and a lot of people are going to get mad at me because I'm not trying to completely eliminate property taxes, but I feel that we need to kind of do it in progression to try to get other people in Congress on board with something. If I just go in there and tell them, hey, let's just eliminate property taxes, nobody's going to jump on that. Right. Nobody's going to co-sign that bill or vote for it. So I'm trying to come up with something that's kind of what politicians like to consider a compromise. So instead of putting it at the value of the home, put it at the purchase price of the home right off the bat. So it stays the same year after year. The other part is the average person in Texas is paying about a little over 1.9% of their home value in taxes. So if we can cut that down to just a 1%, the cities and counties will have to refigure how they spend their money and everything. But if
that's
we standardize this, it's going to help out a lot. And then what my plan is, after that 1%, you only stay at that for 5 years. After that, it goes down to 0.5%. Another 5 years, the property is yours. You don't pay property taxes at all anymore. So in 10 years' time, before the mortgage is even up on it, the property is no longer paying taxes. But anytime the property changes hands, the counties and cities will get that cycle of tax and money again. So
I think that's an interesting.
Everybody, in a sense.
That's an interesting compromise because because a lot of people buy their homes and they want to live in there forever, maybe, you know, pass them on to their kids. A lot of people don't think about farmland because half of the country lives in bigger cities. But if let's say you have a farm. Cities start developing closer to it. So the value of that farm gets more and more expensive, but you have, you know, let's say it's 100 acres and you want to pass it down to your kids. You got to keep paying property tax on it. So that means you got to keep, you know, harvesting crops and, you know, all this other stuff, but then you have an inheritance tax. So like when the kids get it, it's like, oh, you just got a property that's worth $1 million. You need to pay, you know, $500,000 in tax on it. Where are they going to come up with that? And now they're forced to like sell half the land. So now their 100 acres is now 50 acres. And now they still got to pay property tax on it, which keeps going up every year. So now they have to harvest more crops on a smaller property to pay off all these taxes. And then the next generation, they pass it down to their kids and they have to cut it in half again. That is the big taxation is theft. They have this system where, the taxes are in place and over time they continually steal the money, but the land, which is, it's fucking criminal.
And that's the thing. As you get older, you continually pay more and more taxes because they keep raising the tax rates in every aspect of your life. From the day you're born to the day you die, you're paying taxes. So again, this kind of comes to another situation where you have an elderly couple. One of them passes away. They've been living off of Social Security or whatever. The property tax still stays the same. They're still paying on that, even though they lived in the house for 50 years. their income's now half. What do? They end up selling the house and living in a nursing home or something that the state's paying for, which is the rest of us in more taxes.
Yeah.
So this will help out a lot of the elderly people that are, you know, that lose a spouse or whatever, or like you said, you want to pass it down in the family just to not have to continually pay on something and actually own it. Because the only two things that we ever continually pay on in taxes is vehicles and houses. Everything else that you physically buy, you pay tax on it one time, and you're pretty much done.
I think there's more than that. So I had a friend who was a lawyer in Texas, and he was saying he had to pay, he basically had to pay sales, like an additional tax. It wasn't a sales tax. It was like it was basically property tax on his office furniture. And I don't
get into the whole franchise tax much. It's mostly property taxes I've been.
Yeah, it might have been that, but man, I'm telling you, like so when I was going through the law, right? I'm looking for where is there a law that says if you want to operate a barber shop that you need a license, and that's not there in Texas law. If anything, it's there in municipalities. But the only, according to state law, the only business you need a license for is oil and gas. Anything else, you don't need a license, according to the state. Now, municipalities are different, but municipalities are also less enforceable because that's all by contract for the most part. So that's really, it's interesting stuff, man. But going back to the property tax, so what's interesting, and I don't have a tax bill to look at, but what I'd like to see on the property taxes is what's the breakdown? Because I know they have, like, you know, it's not just one, like, this is your tax and this is the amount you pay.
Right.
It's like a bunch of different lines.
This is the thing. Your cities and your counties have hired people, which, again, are paid by more taxes. That's why they have to keep raising the tax rate, to sit there and figure out all of this. It's a very complex deal. And like I said, each county and each municipality is different. So you can live literally across the street and pay a different tax than the person next to you, because of the school district you live in, or whether you're in city limits or not, things like this. So, for example, like me, I live in one county, but the school district that I live in is actually over the county line because I'm very close to the county. So I pay taxes to two different counties now. And it's ridiculous how they do that, and each of them's done at a different rate. So even though the home's valued one level in this county and another level at the other county, but the other county even has a higher rate on top of that, it gets so confusing. It's just so complex. So if we just come up with a standard tax rate and then have the counties and municipalities keep their percentages of what they would normally get, but base it off of that, a total of 1% instead of that 1.9 that the average person's paying right now.
Right. Well, I guess, so I'm really getting at something specific, and like, okay, so if you don't pay your taxes, right, they eventually try to take your house from you.
Right.
But that state law that I told you about says they can only charge a 0.25%, which is much lower than the 1.9. So what I'm wondering is, because everything's itemized, you know, just like we were talking about, like the implied, you know, penalties that they have on the jury duty notices. When you get that bill and it says, you know, it says, you know, 1.9%. And you say, I'm just going to pay the 0.25. I'm just going to pay this one line item that says property tax 0.25%, and that's it, and I'm not going to pay the others. Do they still have the power to say you didn't pay your taxes? Or are these other things that they're just sticking on your bill and hoping you pay? Like, oh, we'll send out 1 million bills and see who pays them.
Well, that's the thing. It's kind of an encompassed ordeal, because you only pay part of the bill. They consider that as still non-payment. It's all or nothing is the way that the system looks at it.
Hmm.
So let's just say your property taxes, you know, are $4,000 for the year. You can pay $50 or you can pay $3,000 of it. It's still considered not paid in full, and they can still put a lien on your house.
Interesting.
So the percentage that you pay doesn't matter. They look at it as a whole sum, and that's what needs to be paid.
What I might do is I might find like a little piece of like really cheap property that's out in the middle of nowhere and buy it just to experiment with these guys.
Right.
And see what I can do. You know, like if I can find a piece of property that's like a couple $100 with, you know, $5 worth of tax on it.
There you go.
Yeah, it's man, it really is interesting. But of course, actually, I know a couple of people in Colorado who have never paid their property tax, and the city just never bothers with them because they're, you know, I don't know if they're, you know, just so far out of the city that no one really cares or what. But if you think about it, it's like if so the way government does anything is they basically have a database and they go through the database and they say, oh, this one's unpaid, blah, 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 blah. But right. what if there was never any property registered? Like the entire United States and all, you know, however many millions of acres of or square feet of land, they're not in a database somewhere. There's a lot of land that's unregistered because there haven't been deeds for it, or, you know, the deeds existed from before the property tax and all this other stuff. So right. What's interesting is that some people, I don't know if that's the people that I know or if it's other people who have just, you know, found places to live. They're able to have and own land without the government interfering with that. Of course, the caveat is if they ever decide to sell that land and they go the route of, you know, using a deed and registering that deed with the government, then yeah. that's when they're going to start taxing it.
They're like grandfathered in is what it is. But, I mean, I went to a seminar. My brother and I went to a seminar back in, like, 2005. And this gentleman was explaining how a couple people actually got out of having to pay property taxes. And it's a very expensive process, but they did it and they own their land free and clear. So the catch is the federal government at some point or another has used every square inch of our country as collateral towards debts to other countries. Obviously, most people know that we owe more money to China than any other country. So I like to use that as an example. So say that the property that you own per se and live on has been used as collateral to China. You can approach China, pay off the debt on your section of land, and it becomes yours free and clear. And then you actually do not have to pay property taxes on it. That's the short and condensed version of it. There was one gentleman that did it, and he found that his property was used as collateral to three different countries. And it cost him, it's a small lot. I mean, it's not even, you know, a tenth of an acre of the lot of land, but it cost him a little over $1.5 million. To actually pay it off in full, but his property's his and he does not pay property taxes on it at all.
Wow. But what's, I mean, $1.5 million, that sounds like more
for a small little plot. Yeah.
Sounds like more than you would ever pay in property tax.
Right. But that plot's his. So he can actually pass that down generation after generation and they never have to pay taxes on it again.
Interesting. Wow.
So, but I mean, like I said, it cost $1.5 million and I don't know anybody who's that much cash on them.
Who was this that, you know, his name?
This gentleman actually lived in the state of Oregon.
Okay. Was he?
I don't have his information.
You know, if he was like with the Sovereign Citizens group or anything like that?
Yeah, that's what they were. They're part of that group.
Yeah, I've heard. So I used to do a lot of research on those guys. And so from what I found, they do say a lot of things that are true, but I've also found that there's a lot of things that they pretty grossly exaggerate or have no factual basis for. But I don't know exactly the specifics about what you're talking about, so I don't want to say it's not true. But yeah, that's one of those things that, you know, like, so like, I'll give you an example. One of the things that they say is your birth certificate is collateral that, you know, for the Federal Reserve, and that's how they're able to collect income tax from you. But at the same time, like, I've never seen a single person walk into court and say, oh, well, you don't have my birth certificate, so therefore there's no collateral. And, you know, like, so right. it's really interesting. And then of course the flip side of that is, even if you know all this stuff, they're, you know, so like when I first started researching them, I was looking for more ways to fight traffic tickets, because that's the trouble I was always getting into. And, you know, their thing was, you don't need a license to drive and you don't need license plates and all this other stuff. And I have been able to get away with doing that more or less. But at the same time, it's like, if you don't have any driver's license at all, you're not going to be able to convince a cop to let you drive home. Like, I mean, right. The reality is, the worst case scenario is they tell you, oh, you know, you have to leave your car here and you can have someone pick it up, and then they usually take off and you can drive home anyway. But the reality is, you're not going to convince them that you don't need a license. You're not going to convince them that driving is a commercial word and a right. motor vehicle is a commercial thing. Because
the officer doesn't want to hear that.
Yeah, and they're
take
they're
that to court.
So. They're trained on procedure, and the courts don't acknowledge any of that either, for the most part. Right. So it's really interesting stuff. But then at the same time, it's kind of like. And then not only the courts and the police, but everyone else around. So, like, let's say, for example, if I think it was a Supreme Court case that says you can use, you can defend yourself by any means necessary, including deadly force, to resist an unlawful arrest.
Right.
But
there's a catch.
Well, the catch is if the police officer is trying to arrest you for driving without a license, even though that might be legal according to however many laws there are, what's going to happen is the general public's going to look at that and say, oh, he was driving without a license, guilty. He was resisting a lawful arrest because they believe that it was a lawful arrest. And it's like a lot of this has nothing to even do with the laws that actually exist. A lot of it's just like public opinion and you know, the public is backing up this corrupt system that's screwing us over, even according to their rules.
Right.
It's
because the majority of the population doesn't understand it. So that's just going by what they've been told or whatever's been passed down. And
absolutely.
People don't take the time to actually research things and look into them and see what the laws actually state on certain aspects. You know, one of the things that I thought was interesting when I moved here to Texas, and again, it's just people's kind of ignorance, but I don't want to use that word too freely because people get offended.
Yeah.
But when I moved here, they're saying, you know, Texas is the only state that can have the flag flown at the same height as the U.S. flag. And it's like, you know, you can do that in every single state, right? I mean, it's just the way it is. It's not just Texas that can do that, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's little things like this, you know, people just don't understand. It's just what they've been told. And that's what they run off of without doing
absolutely
a whole lot of research.
There was I tried to buy a gun at a gun show, and I'm trying to think what happened. All I had was a passport because I didn't have a Texas driver's license. Okay. And the guy didn't want to sell it to me because he believed he was not allowed to sell to anybody unless they had specifically a Texas ID. Which is not the law at all. And I asked a couple cops around the place, and they said, yeah, that's not the law. And I didn't want to argue with the guy, but, you know, because I know people like that. I could have brought the cop over there, and right. I could have said, you know, he's telling you it's legal. You can sell it to me. And he still would have been like, no, like, he doesn't know the law. Like, you know, which, you know, it's probably true. Cops aren't, you know, they don't have law degrees either, but
no.
But yeah, it's crazy how people are. This one always amuses me. I was trying to get an apartment when I lived in Los Angeles, and there was this guy. He gave me the old ignorance is no excuse for the law thing, right? So he wanted a reference from my current landlord. And I told him I'm not on the lease. I'm staying with somebody else in their apartment, so I'm not on the lease. Well, he told me that was illegal because, you know, for whatever reason. And I'm like, that's not illegal. That's if it's the responsibility of the renter to put my name on that lease, then that renter broke the contract, not me. That renter told me I can stay there. So, you know, and this is completely aside from the fact that there's a difference between ignorance of the law and mistake of fact, which is quote unquote, like a real legal defense. Like, you know, oh, I didn't know there was a contract. I didn't know I was in violation of a contract. But you know, this guy was like, you know, oh, well, ignorance is no excuse for the law, and you're breaking the law. And, you know, so he wouldn't rent the apartment to me. And it's like, dude, I'm giving you money. And one of the other things is I had bad credit, which, you know, which wasn't helping. But I told him, hey, I can pay cash for the entire year. And he was just like, nope, not. And I'm like, dude, wait. You can have any renter come in here with good credit. They lose their job tomorrow, and you're going to be worried about evicting them, and you know they're not paying their rent for the next 12 months. Or you could have me paying 12 months in advance. And what's the problem here? But it's, yeah, there people are just in this mentality of, you know, the law is the law. It's crazy. It's a crazy fucking world, man.
All they want to do is make more laws.
Yeah. There ought to be a law.
One of the big things I want to do is I don't, you know, if elected, I don't want to propose a whole bunch of laws. I want to try to remove a lot of the stuff that we have. Our law books are so big right now, and they're constantly pushing more and more laws that it's like,
Do me a favor.
Let's quit making new regulations so much and get rid of some of this old regulation. We have some dumb laws on the books that they will not get rid of. And for example, okay, so the Supreme Court and the federal government and everything declared that, you know, gay marriage was legal. But here in Texas, we still have it as it's on the law books that it's illegal to be married to someone who's gay and everything else. The sodomy laws, which for a long time, here we get back into the definition of words. I thought sodomy was, you know, in a sense, anal sex, but it actually includes oral sex is included in the sodomy law. So it is illegal in the state of Texas to perform or receive oral sex or anal sex. And it's like, are you shitting me right now?
I'm just trying to think. I mean, I can
guarantee you almost every adult over the age of 18 has done it at least one time. Yeah. And one of those two categories, if not both. So it's like, come on. Like, how is this still on the books? But yeah, like homosexuals being married and in a relationship is still illegal. And sadly, the Democrats have tried to get it off the books here in Texas, and the Republicans are fighting to keep it because it goes against their platform.
Yeah.
But you can't enforce those laws because of the federal government's rulings. So why do we keep them? There's just really dumb stuff. Another one that I learned of recently, and this is from my aunt. In the state of Texas, you technically can't have a campfire at nighttime. Okay? The law states that the fire has to be started and ending between 1 hour after sunrise and 1 hour before sunset. That's it. The flames have to be out. So it's illegal to actually have a campfire at nighttime.
Really?
You can get a fine for that. And the only reason I found out about this is because my aunt's neighbor had someone else call the cops on him for having a fire in a burn barrel at nighttime, and they actually issued him a ticket for this. And it's like, come on, really?
It's like the, you know, where you get the woman on the cell phone, they're having a barbecue over there. Like the man, you get stupid laws like this, and people will just abuse them against people. You know, if it's their next door neighbor that they like, oh yeah, you can keep a fire going as late as you want. But if it's the neighbor you don't like, you're calling the cops. It's fucking ridiculous. It's like literally people are going to war with each other over bullshit, and they're using it. They're pulling the government into it, which is, you know, wasting everybody's tax money. You know, for a cop to show up and say, "Oh, exactly. your fire's on too late." How much does that cost us? That's so ridiculous, man.
Right. They're not regaining the money back, even if the lady pays the ticket. You know, I think it's like $100 ticket or whatever. I guarantee you, it costs them more than that to process everything.
Right.
So it's ridiculous, and that's just a bunch of tax money being wasted for stupid things. I mean, I could see, you know, if she burnt down someone's house, then, you know, that's a little different. But she's, you know, just having a little fire. I don't know if she's burning trash or whatever, but it was in a burn barrel. It's like, come on.
Yeah. And I mean, I've gone camping in Texas and had a fire on late, like past sundown. So I was probably committing a felony or something. Like, because that's just
a misdemeanor, but yeah, exactly.
State campgrounds.
I've been on state parks and done the same thing. And it's like, they didn't enforce it. So
it's, man, that's I said felony because there's this, the Cato Institute published this article a while ago that says the average American commits 3 felonies a day. And it's, you know, yeah, it's like all kinds of stupid stuff. Like there's, you know, if you catch a fish that's the wrong size or something and you don't know it, or you know, you're going fishing and you catch an endangered fish and you have no idea.
Right, exactly. You know, especially if you're new at fishing, you're like, I don't know what kind of fish this is.
It's right.
Just, It looks good, we'll eat it type thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you committed a serious crime.
Man, it's so fucked up. But I was going to ask you this. I was going to ask you as a favor. When you are passing these laws, could you write them in plain fucking English?
Yes. As much as I can, yes. I know they have to have like certain stipulations on how they're written. But yeah, as much as we can, put it in layman's terms so that an average sixth grader could understand what the law means and not have to resource to, you know, a law dictionary.
You know what's funny about that is, so there was this doctrine, and I can never remember what it's called, but it's like if you make the laws, you have to make them public. You have to make them known, because then otherwise you'd be able to charge someone with a crime that they didn't know they exist, right? So if you write a law, you have to tell everybody about it in order to play fair. And so when this kind of like philosophy first came around, I think like I want to say it was like, you know, 16th century European, you still had like kings and people trying to abuse their subjects. And what they would do is they'd make the laws and they'd make them public, but then they'd go and put them on top of a 20-foot post so that nobody could read them, right? And this is on top of the fact that, you know, everyone was already illiterate back then. So you had that problem to deal with, but then they stuck it at the top of a post. And my thing is, today they're still doing that. They're using the funny language, which makes it impossible to understand. And they're putting it in these like volumes of like millions of pages, which is like you have to go like, you know,
there's no index.
Yeah.
So you've been trying to find the right volume, let alone the right chapter.
Every single American is expected to follow every single law that's in the Federal Register and in the State Register. And nobody has the time to read all of that before they die.
No.
And we're expected to live our lives according to each and every single one of those laws.
Adding to it more
every
rate than what you could read it anyway.
Yes,
so it's ridiculous. You know,
it's insane.
An example of that is when I moved here. Well, shortly after I moved here, you know, I wanted to have some chickens, but I didn't know if it was legal or not. So I went to City Hall just to ask because I live in city limits. You know, it's like, can I have chickens? And if so, what's the stipulations? You know, do they have to be caged? Do they have to be whatever? So, like, I didn't really know. So I wanted to do it legit so I didn't get in trouble and fined and everything else later. And the lady even asked me, well, what do you want chickens for? And I was like, well, because I don't want to have to pay for eggs. You know, I can have homegrown. I don't know what kind of chemicals and stuff from the store. Whatever. It's just my own thing. But she wouldn't let me look at the ordinances because they have ordinances for the city. And it's like, I just want to see them. Well, she wouldn't let me have a copy. There's no copy available online. And she just goes off of memory. I think you can have up to 4 chickens. And I was like,
can I quote you on that if I get a ticket?
Right, exactly. Like, can I use that in court? Well, the lady at the office said she thinks that I can have 4. So, like, I didn't know. But, yeah, it's just ridiculous. You know, you don't know what you can and can't do, even if you want to follow the laws, because they won't even allow you to read them.
Yeah, and there was a big thing when they legalized open carry of pistols in Texas. There were a lot of cops and they were doing Q&As online and all this other stuff. And I asked the question, okay, if you have, well, it was kind of unrelated to the concealed or to the open carry with concealed carry permit, but it was, if you own a bar, the bar says unlicensed possession of a firearm in this building is a felony.
Right.
Okay, so I think I asked two questions. One is the owner allowed to have a gun to defend his own property? Because assuming the owner is probably, you know, it's a 51% loss. So if they serve more than 51% alcohol, you know, I assume the most owners are probably not getting drunk. They're trying to operate their business and keep an eye on their, you know, make sure no one's stealing from the till. You know, they should be able to have a gun to defend their property, I would think. On top of that, there's the question of what kind of license. It doesn't say on the sign, it just says unlicensed. So does that mean if I have a concealed carry license, which is poorly named because now I can open carry with this license. Does that mean I can open carry into a bar because it is now not unlicensed, it is now licensed? And these cops could not answer either one of those questions. They basically just said, don't take a gun anywhere near a bar. And I'm right. like, I'm not asking for advice. I'm asking for the law. What does the law right. say? And they could not give me a straight answer. And these are the people who are going to be enforcing the laws. Exactly. And one of the guys was even the police chief. Like it all goes back to the same thing. There's too many laws. These cops go through like 6 weeks of training on following mm-hmm. orders. If they don't know what the law is, how are they supposed to enforce it? And if we don't know what the law is, how are we supposed to follow it? And there are lawyers who don't even know all the laws. There's
is this too much? That's why most lawyers specialize in like one category of thing, because it's easier to focus in just one direction and try to keep up with the changes there. But to do like just standard family practice law is very, absolutely. Very difficult to do.
Man, I used to hang out with all these lawyers and they were constantly, you know, they were all in different fields and they were all calling each other and they would get free legal advice, you know, in exchange for their advice. But which is, you know, something we don't have that costs us thousands of dollars potentially.
Exactly.
But yeah, exactly what you're saying, man. They don't know. And so they call an expert. And, you know, we're the people who are expected to follow. Like, we don't call an expert until we get arrested for something that, you know, doing something that we didn't know we weren't supposed to be doing.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's so fucked up, man.
It is.
Shit. Anyway, man, let's...
That's why I'm running for office. Try to change some of this yeah. stuff. Get rid of some of all these extra laws that we have.
Absolutely, man. I'll back that 100%. So do you have a website or anything? Are you collecting donations? Are you looking for volunteers?
Yes, yes, and yes. So the website is www.savino4texas.com, but it's spelled S-A-V-I-N-O, the number 4TX.com. You can do contributions straight there on the website. We're always looking for volunteers. We're trying to block walk at least once a week, every Saturday pretty much. We're out block walking in the district somewhere. I'm going to try and keep that posted for events and not necessarily my pages on Facebook and stuff, times, locations, everything else, so that people want to come help out. That'd be great. A lot of times, you know, if they're in the morning ones, it's hot out, I'll take everybody, go get some ice cream afterward or something, just kind of as a thank you. Just to nice. Be nice, you know, I mean, you're giving me your time and everything to help me get elected, so... That's
absolutely.
Always great. And yeah, donations are a big thing. And, you know, I've got right now, I've got 600 envelopes ready to go get sent out to voters, and postage, man. Postage is killing me. Same thing with signs. Signs are not cheap. Until I got into this, I didn't realize how much political signs cost for yard signs. You know, yeah, you buy them in quantity, you get a discount, but I wasn't planning on spending, you know, thousands of dollars on signs, and that's literally what it ends up costing you. So,
absolutely. Well, it sounds like you got a plan, at least to where to spend the money, which I tell a lot of candidates to have that plan, because I know, you know, some people who are new, they just like to, like, raise money, and then however much money I raise, you know, that'll determine what I can get. But that's right. I say that's backwards. If you know you want signs, if you know you want letters to send out, and then you know how much money to raise, and I think that speaks more directly to people because they know... You know, you're not pulling a Clinton Foundation and taking this money you know, they're like, oh yeah, okay, we need to help him buy signs. We need to, like, it works really well. they're buying something more specific, and it makes them feel, I think, more involved with the process itself, which is pretty awesome too. Because some people, you know, it's difficult. A lot of people don't have time or money. Some people just have time. Some people just have money. So it's, you know, it's. Yeah. However you can help.
Any form of assistance is much well appreciated. So.
Absolutely. All right. So, and it's Savino4TX.com, right?
Yes, sir.
Awesome. We'll put a link to that on this live feed once it's done. And cool. Awesome. It's been great talking with you, man.
Yes, thank you. Appreciate it.
What is taxation?
It is theft with a capital T.
Damn right it is. All right, man. It's been great, and I definitely want to follow up with you and see how the campaign goes, and good luck.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. I'll see you around.
All right.